Blog Talk Radio.
Find out life's a game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Hell yeah.
They're in every break of the game. Every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch.
Good evening, all, and thank you for joining us here for the Red Zone Blitz. Coming to you here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network. Frat House Mike joining you, and along with me, Brandon.
Yes, sir. How you doing tonight?
There we go. Look at there. Boy, we just got this going so perfectly anymore. Comes right together. And we're coming here. What are we doing here? Well, we're coming here to talk to you about everything that had just gotten done, taking place in week six here in the NFL football season. Yes, did you hear me, folks? I said week six. My God. You know, it seems like it takes forever to get to 6 weeks in baseball. And in football, wham, just like that, week six. And look, think about this. Think about it this way. There's only 11 weeks left to the regular season. Football just, you know, by virtue of the fact it's one game a week, Brandon, it just goes by so, so quickly.
Well, it's one game a week per team. If you watch it right, you get, you know, you get a lot of days. You get Sunday all day, Monday and Thursday night. That's nice little break throughout the week.
We certainly get our fair share of it here at the Frat House. That's for darn sure.
Absolutely. We make sure we get it all if we can.
We picked out a couple of games here we thought would at least get everybody's interest. Well, they should have, for gosh sakes. We've got a little bit of everything in here. We've got high scores. We've got incredible performances by quarterbacks. And, we even have an overtime game. How about a shutout game? Let's start off with that Baltimore and Tampa Bay game, Brandon. 48-17, Baltimore won that in a blink of an eye. It was ridiculous. 28-0 after the first quarter, 38-0 at the half. Joe Flacco had a career day, throwing for 5 touchdowns, no interceptions. He wasn't sacked. 21-29, 306 yards. What's a perfect QB rating? I think it's like 152. I'm not sure if you know, Brandon.
It's something like that. It's up there somewhere.
Yeah, I know it's not. You would think it might be a perfect 150. I think it's actually like 152, something to that effect. Well, Flacco was about as close to perfect as you can get. How about 146.0?
Wow.
The Baltimore Ravens racked up 475 yards of offense. And this was all before, as I pointed out, Tampa Bay even had time to tie their shoes. You got to give it to them. I mean, Mike Glennon didn't have a horrible day. He did his level best to try to come back in this thing. But the most they were able to manage was just a mere 17 points. I guess it was sooner than later, Brandon. We had to expect we were finally going to see a game like this out of the $100 million quarterback, huh?
Well, I know he is one of your favorites, you know.
Oh, yeah, don't you know that?
But really, this game was over at halftime. We were sitting here, and we were just like, every time the score scrolled on the screen, it was just more points, another touchdown, another touchdown. I mean, it was just insane at how good you know, Flacco was playing. I mean, and he was spreading it around. It wasn't just like one guy. I mean, it, you know, there was, you know, Torrey Smith had two, Steve Smith had one, you know, and there's three others that's got spread around as well. So, you know, like you said, he probably had what you would consider, you know, like a career game. You said his quarterback rating was
142.
The best they can come up with, believe it or not, is 158.3 is considered a perfect rating. How they come out to that number, I'll never know, but that's what the supposed perfect quarterback rating. I guess it would have to be maybe his, you know, completions, or maybe he needed more yards to get to the perfect number. I mean, his completion percentage is pretty solid, so I'm not quite sure, you know, where he's lacking to not get the perfect rating. But, yeah, they just had this game covered. Defense played well. They shut him out for the first half. I mean, Tampa Bay got some garbage time points, I'm sure, in the second half of that game. They probably don't mean nothing as far as, you know, as far as against the Ravens. But, yeah, totally dominant performance. Ravens got to be considered one of the, you know, favorites to win the AFC North right now. I mean,
and you point out that and rightly so. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Joe Flacco, but and I got to give the devil his due here. You know, I end up seemingly to do this at least once a week here. But Joe Flacco, take a look at it for a moment. Sixth ranked right now in the league in yards. Mm-hmm. He's got himself 12 touchdowns and just 3 interceptions. 63.6 overall completion percentage and a 97.8 QB average over, I guess, I'm trying to think, have they played 6 games or 5,
yes,
whatever?
Five. Yes, they're 4-2.
Okay, so over 6 games. I mean, that's not shabby at all for you know, for all my complaining that the guy's overpaid and overrated. Not shabby at all.
Well, no, and if you think about it, I mean, I think you and I and a lot of other people were more or less writing the Ravens off. I mean, they started the year with such turmoil with Ray Rice. You know, Bernard Pierce was hurt for the first, I don't know, 3-4 weeks. They had essentially no running game. They had, you know, older receivers. You know, Steve Smith, what, 35?
Yep.
He's a, you know, Carolina Panther cast off, you know, and there's a lot of other issues. You know, their defense is starting to get a little old. And yet, here they are, 4-2. You know, looking like world beaters. Now, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are, you know, they're not necessarily the greatest competition, but, you know, 48-17, that's an impressive score no matter who you're playing. And that's a lot of points to put up in this league.
I think early on, I think the, you know, the lack of Ray Rice,
mm-hmm.
I think probably threw them a little bit for a loop. But you know something? You got to say that they're starting to find it now with Justin Forsett. Justin Forsett right now is the fifth leading rusher in the NFL.
Yeah, he's clearly surpassed Pierce. Pierce was supposedly going to be the, you know, starter once the Ray Rice debacle happened. And, you know, he got hurt and Forsett stepped up. And I don't think Forsett's given this job back. Unless he has an injury, I think Bernard Pierce is going to more or less be, you know, the change of pace kind of back.
Absolutely. And I mean, there's no reason to. I mean, for gosh sakes, I mean, at this point right now, the Ravens, I think, would be foolish to be looking at making any change whatsoever in that department. Leave it alone. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Well, you know, the next two games we have coming up are also in this division. And, you know, technically the Ravens aren't leading the division because of what we're going to talk about in a few minutes. But they clearly, to me, right now, look to be the cream of the crop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, for a while there, Cincinnati looked like it, but they've not looked the greatest the last couple of weeks. And you know, there's another team that's knocking on their door, the Browns, that are starting to, you know, look a little interesting and make some noise. So, you know, it's that division is turning out to be pretty interesting right now.
What are your thoughts out there? This is the kind of thing we do here on Tuesday night. It's a real shotgun format. We're going to run through a bunch of games. More than likely, we're going to touch on your favorite team, 347-826-9964. To make this a really, really great program, what you want to be doing is jumping in and giving us your thoughts as well. That other game you're referencing, I believe, is the New England Patriots and the Buffalo Bills. And the New England Patriots, after, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, and again, this is funny because I think we're in week 5 of this program. I don't know if there's been a week we haven't talked about the Patriots on this program yet. But the talk early on first week, second week of this show, little bit of apprehension about what the New England Patriots were. Suddenly, not an issue at all. Patriots won that game 37-22. But you got to give some, you got to give a little bit of credit, I think, to Kyle Orton. I believe what this was his second week starting, and really hasn't been all that bad whatsoever. But Tom Brady, 2 weeks in a row now, back to form, 27 of 37, 361 yards, four touchdowns, four, and had 139.6 QB rating himself. You got a little bit, your guys got a little bit of bad news there with the Ridley injury just yesterday.
Yeah, Ridley's a little blow, but I think that Gerard Mayo is a bigger blow. Okay. He's a defensive captain. He's essentially the quarterback on defense, middle linebacker, or inside linebacker, depending which whether they're playing three or four linebackers. Him going down is, you know, that's the biggest blow. Stephen Ridley, you know, I've been critical of him before. He's not my favorite back. I almost think they're better off running with Shane Vereen as the primary, but they're probably going to mix in Brandon Bolden a little bit, and we might see a little bit of White, the second-year running back. So, you know, we'll see how that hurts. I think the Gerard Mayo is clearly the bigger injury there. This game, if you look at this game, it's interesting. It's all passing. Neither team really had much of a running game. You know, Kyle Orton could definitely use C.J. Spiller to remove his head from his rectum, but you know, he clearly has been invisible lately. You know, Fred Jackson almost seems to be their new primary back, and he's, you know, a little long in the tooth, and actually I believe he was only re-signed just shortly before the season started. So mm-hmm. I don't know that he was even with him in training camp. So, you know, I think the Bills have some bigger questions even at running back than the Patriots do. I mean, the Patriots have always kind of run, you know, by a committee more or less with the running back. I mean, yeah, Ridley got the bulk of the carries for the most part, but you know, there was one week, I think it was 2 weeks ago when we were talking, you know, Ridley had over 100 yards and Shane Vereen was just behind it in 90. So, you know, I think they're going to be okay on that side. I think the bigger problem, you know, they have is on the other side of the ball. One thing that looked good for the Patriots is they seem to have some receivers that could catch. I mean, Julian Edelman was back, and the guy you picked up, Brandon LaFell, had a great game, catching two touchdowns. You know, so it's good to see a little bit more balance from just tight ends on the receiving core. This Tim's guy, they just got back from the first 4 weeks of a PED suspension. He only had one catch, but it was a big one for 43 yards and a touchdown. So definitely, you know, I like what I see. I'm a little worried about the Gerard Mayo thing, but otherwise I think they're going to be okay. They're still playing in the AFC East, which is horrible.
A couple of observations for you. First of all, your team went without Mayo for most of the season last year. So
yes,
this isn't unfamiliar territory to him, and I don't think it's one that is insurmountable. When you made reference before to C.J. Spiller, I made a comment the other night that I really don't believe Spiller has ever come back from that massive injury he had, what was it, 3 seasons ago now? I don't think the guy's ever been quite the same. And with regard to the New England rushing issue over there, Brandon, I ask this question. In light of the fact, as you point out, New England, it's not one of their stronger sides. It's not one of the stronger sides of the ball for them. And the fact that you really only had 50 yards against the team in Buffalo that it would seem to me you should have been able to rush up against. Is Vereen going to be able to carry the mail for the whole team?
Well, I don't think Vereen's going to get the bulk of the carries. I think he'll get some more, but he'll probably stay in his third down role where he's the third down back, where a lot of times in hurry up, he'll be the, you know, back out of the, you know, screen pass out of the, you know, backfield, or he'll line up in the shotgun next to Brady. I think you may see a few increased handoffs from the, you know, from the rushing side, but I think you're going to see Brandon Bolden and James White get a few more carries as well. And I think you'll, you know, they'll spread it out. I'm not too worried about that side of the ball. I'm more worried about the other. I think the other side of the ball, how they're going to have to do it is they got Brandon Bolden coming back from, Brandon Browner,
right,
coming back from suspension, and he didn't play the first week. Apparently, it seemed like he hurt his ankle or something in practice. I don't know if he's going to suit up tomorrow or not, but I think giving another veteran cornerback will free up some safeties to help cheat up a little bit to help in a linebacking core. So I think, you know, I think we're better equipped to deal with the losses this year than they were last year. You know, last year, I mean, you know, they lost Mayo and Wilfork, and that defense just, you know, was awful. They were clueless, and that's why they didn't go far in the playoffs. So I you know, I'm not super worried yet. We can't have another big name on defense go down. I mean, you can only take so many per team,
right?
You know, and losing two starters in 1 week is just brutal. So, you know,
all right,
we'll go forward.
Here's another thing that, in my opinion, is completely brutal, and that's ties.
This is actually the game I was referring to when we were talking about the first one.
Oh, okay, all right. I hate ties.
Yeah, I
positively hate ties in the NFL because, to me, it screws everything up, particularly as you go through the season and you're trying to analyze that particular division that that team might be in, and now you got to start calculating in half games. To me, half games are reserved for baseball. This is stupid. But nonetheless, we've got ourselves a tie. We had our first tie of the season. Hopefully it'll be our last. And it was between the Carolina Panthers and the Cincinnati Bengals, who ended their matchup after a full extra quarter, 37-37. And interestingly enough, both teams actually did score in overtime. Just a mere 3 points for both of them. Both had the opportunity to pick up field goals, which, under the old format, interestingly enough, Brandon, the game would have been over when Cincinnati scored their field goal. That was the old format. But now that both teams get the opportunity to get a possession, in fact, Carolina came back and then was able to tie it before the regulation clock in the extra quarter concluded.
Well, I like the new format better. I do too. Cool.
It
makes them play for a touchdown right away. You know, they don't just, you know, get to the 20 and then start, you know, centering the ball and getting ready to kick a field goal. Now they actually keep playing, and I think it makes overtime a little more exciting. I would like to see no ties too. I agree. I don't like that, but you know, football is a tough game. Five quarters. I don't know, a sixth. That's just. I think that's asking a lot out of a player, to be honest with you.
I think what they ought to do in order to avoid ties is after the extra, at the conclusion of the extra quarter, what they have to do is roll out soccer nets at either end, and what they have to do is kick the football up and down in a shootout style issue into the soccer nets. I think that's what you ought to do.
Yeah,
and then
we can
emulate the NHL in the shootout concept, but we're using a football and a soccer style.
Knowing you as I do, I know that's totally tongue-in-cheek.
I would hate it.
You would be livid. You would be livid, and I wouldn't like to see that either. You know what? It is what it is. You see maybe one of these a year. A lot of times you see it between the two division, you know, rivals, which kind of makes the scoring in that division, you know, a little easier. This particular case, it's not. So now we're going to have the NFC North with a half game and the AFC North, the last one we had was NFC South.
What was the last one we had? Green Bay, right?
Yes. Yeah, Green Bay had one last year. I forget who they were tied with. I think it might have actually been somebody in their own division now that I think about it.
And then the year before that, I think we had, San Fran and the Rams? Or it was two seasons before that. The Rams were definitely involved in one. Listen. A couple of side stories here with regard to this particular game. First of all, I'm still not convinced Cam Newton is Cam Newton yet. I've not personally been thrilled with what I've seen from him. There might be folks out there who are Carolina fans who want to scream at me. And listen, folks, by all means, if you want to, just pick up the phone, 347-826-9964. That's why we have a phone number, for you to call up and scream at me. 29 of 46, I didn't think was all that efficient. 284 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. Those were his numbers there. But here's what makes me nervous. With the health problems that this guy has had, he, one more time, is this team's leading rusher at 107 yards. Other than that, they don't have a ground game. Now, on the other side, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, and I know you've got all the injury updates. Cincinnati Did Gio Bernard get banged up and is questionable now for this week?
Not that I know of. Giovanni Bernard was actually playing in the overtime.
Okay.
You know, AJ Green we know of, and Marvin Jones, who you've had all year on your fantasy team, they finally decided to just IR him because his foot isn't getting better. Well, part of the Panthers, going back to the Panthers' rushing issues, their top three backs are all hurt. You know, James Stewart's out, been injured, close to coming back. D'Angelo Williams is still hurt, going to be out for at least 2 to 3 more weeks. And their big, heavy fullback, his name's escaped me at the moment, but he's also out hurt. And so they're running with guys who, you know, you're talking about the fourth, fifth guy on the roster. So that's why that's part of the Panthers' problems. They're having serious injury problems at, you know, that position. So what you're going to see going forward is they're slowly going to get some of them back. James Stewart, I think you might see this week. I think he was close to playing last week, but couldn't quite go. D'Angelo Williams is still a couple weeks away from what I've read, so I wouldn't count on seeing him. You know, I think it'll get better. As far as, you know, Cam Newton, I mean, he certainly put up numbers of Cam Newton of old. He may not look it with the eye test as quick, but he certainly, I mean, you know, yeah, his completion percentage isn't the greatest, you know, but he still, you know, he threw for almost 300 yards and rushed for over 100, had the team in it. I mean, it's hard to say he's not back, but, you know, he doesn't necessarily look as quick, but I don't know that he was ever super quick. He kind of, you know who he reminds me of as a rushing quarterback kind of was Donovan McNabb. He kind of rushes the same way as McNabb did, where McNabb never looked super fast either, but yet he always seemed to come up with a good chunk of yards when you needed it. So, I don't know.
Except that with the injuries that this guy has had coming into this season, and I think, he was hobbled on an ankle. For him to be having to pick up...
He also has a rib issue.
Yeah, and a rib issue, right. But for this team to have to rely upon him picking up 100 yards a game, I don't know how wise that is. That's the thing that's got me concerned. And consider for a moment that this week they have to go into Green Bay, where right now they are an eight-point underdog. And against that defense, which isn't a bad passing defense, this Carolina team could be looking again at having to rely on some on a ground game.
I agree, but at the same time, you know, you got to give him credit. I mean, he does what they needed to do to at least have a chance to win the game. I mean, yeah, they got a tie, but you know, I mean, from the Carolina point of view, you know, they went into Cincinnati, who's, you know, a 3-1 team when they go into it, and they leave with a tie. It could be worse for the Panthers, especially considering they had no running backs. All their starting running backs are out hurt, you know, plus, you know, some. So, you know, I guess they, you know, as a Panther fan, you got to kind of be optimistic that they played so tough, you know, and Cam did do what he needed to do. I agree with you. I don't agree that it's good for his long-term health or their, you know, long-term interest for him to be doing that every week. But, you know, until he gets some running backs back, you know, I don't know what other options they have. I mean,
now, interestingly enough, it makes Cincinnati over there in the AFC North. Now, with that, we got to start looking at it in terms of half game. With that half game, it makes them a little more vulnerable to being able to actually grab hold of. And as I think you made reference to it when we were talking about the Baltimore game, this makes Cincinnati a little more vulnerable to Baltimore in that particular division. Over in the NFC South, there is a division nobody's really quite sure what's going on. Atlanta was believed that perhaps maybe they were going to be coming around. New Orleans has fallen on their face again. You know, I don't know. Maybe it won't have any effect. Maybe that half-game thing won't have any effect on Carolina or not. I would have to say the NFC South right now might be the biggest crapshoot as far as who's going to win that.
Well, I think the half game could end up helping both of them if it's tight divisions because, you know, a tie is better than a loss. So if you come down to the end and say you would have had 2-9-7 teams, well, if you're 9-6-1, you're better than 9-7. I mean, 10-6 at that level would be, you know, the next step up. Cincinnati, I mean, at the rate they're going, they could be, you know, 11-4-1. Who knows? I mean, whatever weird combination they're, you know, right now they're sitting at, you know, 3-1-1.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think it could end up benefiting both of them because I think both divisions are going to come down to the very end. I think Baltimore is going to end up contending with Cincinnati. Cleveland is kind of knocking on the door. I don't know if they're ready to take that step, but, you know, we'll see how they can hang in there. And on the other, in the other division, the NFC South, I think the Saints and the Panthers are going to be the two to watch. The Saints need to play some better football, but, you know, I think ultimately they're probably going to be there because I don't think there's a really strong team in that division.
So, well, that's exactly
what's
going to
keep them in. It's going to keep everybody in that division close. So, you know, the Falcons, if they can manage to get some wins, may get into it. They need to, you know, they're a couple games behind in the loss column, though. So I think, you know, right now you're looking at the Panthers and the Saints as the, you know, the leaders, at least at the moment.
Okay. 347-826-9964. Jump in with us, please. Give us a holler. We're talking football, and we're talking X's and O's, and we're talking about what happened on the field in Week 6. And, what happened to the Pittsburgh Steelers? 31-10, they lost to the Cleveland Browns. You know, I'm going to be honest with you, Brandon, I didn't expect this one at all. You know, great, fine, no problem. Cleveland's playing at home. Great, fine, no problem. Brian Hoyer might be the guy. But I really thought Pittsburgh would go in there. This is an interdivision rival. Ben Roethlisberger has looked really, really good in some games. And then other times, he goes in and looks just like he did on Sunday. 21-42, 228 yards, one touchdown, one interception, and a 64.4 QB rating. Brian Hoyer only put the ball in the air 17 times, completing 8 of them. So we're not talking about a lights-out performance here. But there was 158 yards on the ground and 3 touchdowns, 2 from Ben Tate and 1 from Crowell. So Pittsburgh, there we go again. I just sit here every week and I go, which Pittsburgh's going to show up?
Well, I think we had talked about them before and, you know, we were wondering if they were going to be able to sustain. And I think, you know, you had brought up on the show before, you think Pittsburgh was, you know, this season away from a major rebuild. And I think that's what's coming. You know, they might still be able to put a game together here and there, but I think they're clearly going to end up being fourth in this division. The Cleveland Browns are sitting at 3-2. Listen to this. 3-2. They go to Jacksonville this week, which is a winnable game for them. Then they host the Raiders the following week. They could, in theory, be at 5-2 in week 8, and they're only 2 weeks away from Josh Gordon returning and give them another weapon. Cleveland could quietly hang around just based on the way their schedule is and, you know, how things could work out here with their, you know, getting their guy back. You know, I'm just looking ahead here. Even after the Oakland game, they have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers coming in. They got 3 winnable games in a row. They could clearly be a team to watch here, and Pittsburgh is a team on the other end. I think they're going down. They're on the downhill, so, you know, I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
I've heard some analysts this week openly ask the question or make the suggestion, Cleveland, sign Hoyer now to an extension. If I'm not mistaken, Hoyer is up at the end of this year, and the thinking had been that Mansell would walk in.
That is correct. He is a free agent. He only signed a 1-year deal. And he's already stated he's not interested in riding the bench, and he prefers playing, being a starter, over staying in Cleveland. So
interesting dilemma for Cleveland, because let's just say for a moment that the scenario that you just painted rides out, and you look at a team going 5-1, or I'm sorry, 5-2.
Well, they're 3-2 right now with 3 winnable games. They could be 6-2 at the end of week 9, just as we're sitting here. That's an incredible number. They've already had their bye, so, you know, it's just, you know, they're looking good.
Yeah,
I see what you're saying. It's setting up Hoyer is in the catbird seat if he keeps winning, because, you know, he's going to get sniffs from other teams, and Cleveland will not pay him guaranteed starter money, which is the only thing he'll probably sign for to stay in Cleveland. And I just don't see how they can do it because they've already committed to Menzel with his contract.
We've already seen that standard starter money now is anywhere between what, about $14 and $17 million a year.
Even if you take Hoyer, who's probably going to be on the lower end of that, and let's just say give him $12 million a year for 5 years, that's $60 million. There's no chance. There's no chance Cleveland can invest that because they already have that invested in Manziel. They would be basically paying two guaranteed starters. And, you know, with Manziel being a first-round pick, his contract's fully guaranteed probably through year three and probably essentially into the fourth year. So, you know.
So at this point right now, we could actually, and this is all hyperbole here, folks, or not hyperbole, but we're speculating, hypothesis. We could have a team here with a one-year quarterback in Brian Hoyer, potentially get Cleveland into the playoffs. I'm not going to say that they're going to go very far, but let's just say they make a playoff appearance and then not be there next year in favor of Johnny Manziel.
It's entirely possible. I actually don't see any other outcome because I everything I've read, I do not see Brian Hoyer signing a type of contract that doesn't guarantee him starter money to stay in Cleveland. And you know, you got teams out there like the Oakland Raiders who guaranteed Matt Schaub like $8 million, and then they benched him before week one. You know, if teams are out there guaranteeing that kind of money to, you know, a guy like Schaub, Hoyer, who's winning, he's going to get more. And I don't think Cleveland's going to be able to deal with it. I mean, look at some of the teams out there that need quarterbacks. I mean, well, clearly the Raiders still do. They're going to have a whole new regime, you know, coaching staff, so who knows where they're going to want to go. Houston Texans are still kind of a question mark. I mean, they're doing better than everybody expected them to do.
Yes, they
are. But we haven't even seen Ryan Mallett yet, so who knows how that's going to play out. And then, you know, with Brian Hoyer's ties to the Patriots and the Texans coach down there, they may end up looking at somebody like him in free agency if they don't know where they're going for sure. I don't, you know, there's a lot of ways you can go with this. So I think Hoyer's, well, clearly the best decision for Hoyer was to sign the 1 year deal, you know, and do what he's doing. I mean, if they keep winning, you know, his bank account's just going to keep going up.
Yeah. Throw into the mix that at this point right now, from everything that we hear and know, from what we see on a regular basis on Saturday afternoons, we're going to be looking at a better quarterback class coming out of the collegiate ranks than what we saw last season. So it certainly does indicate that for those teams that are going to be out there looking for a quarterback, there potentially are going to be some options, and it appears that one of them is going to be coming out of Cleveland. That would be my guess.
Wow. Well, yeah, but you know what, with the college thing, they said that last year too, and then, you know, we had two guys at the end of the year, and it weakened the class. And
well, the class wasn't very good coming out to begin with, but no, you've got a number of good ones coming out this year, and that is the case. I mean, that we do know, but.
Well, let's just make sure they get through the college season without getting dinged up. I mean, Mettenberg from, you know, LSU was looking like a world beater until he hurt his, you know, tore his ACL in the last game, and he ended up falling to, what, the fourth round in the draft? I mean,
sanctioned severely by the NCAA for signing autographs? Hmm?
And
they can't end their season, right?
Yeah, so, you know what, I'm not – you can never know. And even if you think a guy's good, how many times do we see somebody drafted really high who just can't play? I mean, Jamarcus Russell out in Oakland was the latest example of it. You know, we may have some from the last 2 years that haven't proven out yet. You know, we're not, you know, totally sure yet. I mean, it's not looking real good for E.J. Manuel right now. I mean, as you and I were talking about him a little bit last week, we'd like to see him get a shot somewhere else down the road. But, you know, right now they spent a high draft pick on him and he's not looking real good.
Yep.
So,
all right, let's take a minute here, folks, and what I want to do is I just want to recognize a couple of our friends, and we will be right back with you in 1 minute.
Away from your computer? That's no problem. Take CLW83 Podcast with you wherever you go with the TuneIn Radio app. Download the free TuneIn app from the App Store or Google Play. Then search for CLW83 to connect to the latest editions of the NAWC, Touch 'Em All, The BS Big Show, and all of your other favorite CLW83 programs. CLW83, online, on demand, and on the go with the TuneIn app for Apple and Android devices. Download it today.
Do you enjoy a completely different perspective from all other run-of-the-mill sports shows?
What in the wide, wide world of sports?
Then the Frat House Sports Show is the show for you. Join Frat House Mike and Sidekick every Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock Eastern for your weekly dose of the Frat House Sports Show. From NASCAR to hockey and everything in between, the Frat House Sports Show covers it all. Be sure to like their page on Facebook and check out their website, frathousesports.net, right here on herbfm.com.
All righty, Fred House, Mike, and Brandon, right back here with you, breaking down everything that we saw this past weekend in Week 6 in the NFL. And we're looking for your comments as well, 347-826-9964. Don't tell me you didn't see these games. I know you did. You all sat and watched them, maybe not as many as we did. But give us your thoughts on any of the games that we're bringing up here. And, hey, if we don't mention your team, fear not. Give us a call. And throw your team in there. We'll talk about them. We're not afraid to. Brandon, everybody thought the NFC East was going to be a cakewalk for the Philadelphia Eagles. The rest of the teams weren't too terribly strong, but suddenly right now the Eagles find themselves tied. Actually, I think the Dallas Cowboys have a little bit of an edge on them technically in the standings. Tied 5-1, the Dallas Cowboys are, after they went to the home of the 12th man and beat the Seattle Seahawks 30-23. This was actually a very, very impressive performance, not only by Tony Romo, but you got to throw in again DeMarco Murray, who had 29 carries, 115 yards, and a touchdown. You got to throw in the Dallas defense that looked very, very good, hitting the quarterback and keeping him honest, hitting him a number of times back there. This was really a little bit of a shock. Tony Romo was 21-32, 250 yards, two touchdowns, and a 110.2 QB rating. Russell Wilson, boy, as good as he looked the week before. All right, 14-28, 126 yards, one interception. But I got to tell you, that's where the Dallas defense really stepped up and really hassled Wilson all game long and really put it to the Seahawks offensively. What did you make of this one?
Well, I'm going to go a little bit more in depth here, as we like to say on this show.
Good.
We like the X's and O's. And I'm going to disagree with you on one little aspect of the Dallas Cowboys offense. I mean, yes, it was impressive. They go in there. I am not going to take a thing away from anybody who can beat Seattle in Seattle, and especially, you know, by a touchdown. Not taking anything away from that. One thing I think that you got to look at, though, for this team is DeMarco Murray. Yes, his numbers are okay. You take away, he had one long run of 25 yards. Basically, that puts his rushing statistics at 28 carries for 90 yards. That's a little over 3 yards a carry. I don't know if maybe Dallas is leaning on him a little too much too early. And, you know, their backup running back, Randall, just got himself in a little bit of trouble today, getting arrested for, you ready for this? Shoplifting men's cologne and underwear. I mean, are you kidding me? But anyway,
he said though afterward he was getting those for the boss. He was getting those for Jerry Jones.
Yeah, okay. Either way, if DeMarco Murray starts to get a little run down and or gets an injury, I mean, he's on pace to set all kind of, you know, workload records in the NFL at this moment. And, you know, his yards per carry seems to be tracking down a little bit. I think Dallas needs to find a way to kind of rest him if they can while still playing him. I know that sounds tough, but they need to lighten his carries, his touches. I don't think he can take this kind of pounding for the whole season. And unfortunately for Tony Romo, his history after November isn't the greatest. So I'm still not totally sold on Dallas. I'm not taking away from what they did this week, beating Seattle in Seattle, but I don't like the long-term outlook for the Cowboys right now, the way they're made up. They need to find, you know, another back that can put some, you know, yardage on the board and not get arrested. They need to, you know, kind of, you know, keep Murray healthy. You know, they need to like spell him. I mean, 29 carries is an awful lot of carries in today's NFL. That's a big beating.
This has been the talk, I guess, going back to about week two or three with the Dallas Cowboys, when it started to become obvious to analysts out there that suddenly Dallas seemed to be concentrating more and more on a ground game. But
yes,
you and I talked about it, I believe, might have been 3 weeks ago right here on this program a little bit, when we said, you know, not a bad move. DeMarco Murray is very capable, but is it a smart move to try to run him exclusively without having the benefit really of a second back? I'm not sure Randall is that second back. Certainly not in I don't think he's in Murray's category. That's for darn sure. This is a obviously some sort of a new offensive scheme plan that Dallas has embraced this season. It's obviously been successful. As I pointed out there, you find them 5-1 and leading the NFC East. I don't know if you can expect them to lay off of that plan. I really don't. I'm just looking here to see who they are going to. They're going to stay at home and they're going to have the Giants coming in. I think you're going to see another heavy dose of Murray.
I agree. And unfortunately for, you know, the Cowboys is, you know, how long can he take this beating? I mean, he has been a little injury prone so far in his career. It's kind of, what's the old adage? Don't put all your eggs in one basket. You know, DeMarco Murray goes down, where are the Dallas Cowboys? I mean, that's my question. I mean,
well, that's an interesting, because, and you know, I'm supposed to make an appearance tomorrow evening on Carl's BS Big Show. And that's one of the questions that I was actually going to bring up with regard to the Dallas Cowboys at some point or another in that program. My concern with the Dallas Cowboys, as much as I'm willing to recognize them as being the leader right now of the NFC East, and in my opinion, if you're 5-1, look, let's get it straight. You're a legitimate team. I don't care how you got there.
I'm not saying they're not. I'm just worried about the rest of the season. That's what I'm worried.
As you point out, the question I plan on bringing up on the BS Big Show is, without DeMarco Murray, is this team 5-1? And I would say no, they're not.
No.
So in some respects, they're kind of a two-dimensional team. They're not, you know, we already know with certain teams, you lose your running back. Yeah, all right, you might have a couple of guys you can plug in there to fill in, and you can get by without them if you miss a couple of games without your lead guy. But I'm not sure Dallas doesn't completely fall flat on their face if DeMarco Murray's not in there. That's my point.
I think their defense is playing a little better than everybody expected.
Yes.
And, you know, as far as their offense, they, you know, I think we're beating this to death with Murray. They need to find another option there. One interesting notice is I'm noticing looking at the Cowboys, they haven't played a division game yet for some reason. That must be like some kind of schedule quirk, that they actually have not played any other NFC East team. So I guess technically, if the way you look at this, I think the Eagles at 5-1 are actually slightly ahead of them, based on the fact the Eagles are actually 2-0 in the division already. But you know, I don't know. I this week against the Giants is the Dallas Cowboys' first division game, so you know, right. I think that the Giants have their own issues, as you know, we've saw from watching that game that they played. You know, we're going to talk about that one next with the, you know, the Eagles and Giants. So, but you know, just before we get off this game, one little observation I've noticed here with Seattle, too, is Seattle needs to, you know, fix their offense. Their offense is not working right now. Marshawn Lynch is not putting up the numbers he should be, and you already had alluded to Russell Wilson. You know, he's kind of up and down, up and down. They need to fix that if they want to be a player. They need to fix it. They're in a really tough division with the 49ers and the Arizona Cardinals. They need to get this thing righted if they want to, you know, repeat as Super Bowl champions.
Well, the interesting thing about that NFC West is that so many of us, and again, this goes back to preseason. When we first looked at the NFC, everybody would have said, well, okay, the NFC West is the strongest division. The NFC East, maybe the NFC South is the weakest division. NFC West, you got all those star-studded. But take a look at that when you take, San Francisco, yeah, all right. Kaepernick looked pretty good last night. San Francisco won that Monday night game. They're 4-2. Seattle, though, is 3-2 and in third place right now in the division. Arizona right now might just be the best team in that division.
They look pretty good. They got their starter, Carson Palmer, back, who didn't look bad. Andre Ellington's looked good all year. They got two, three good wide receivers on that team with Fitzgerald and Floyd and John Brown. They look like they're the team to beat going forward with the West right now. I mean, yeah, it's still early. We're not even to the halfway point, but you got to like it. If you're a Cardinal fan, you got to be happy with what you're seeing.
Talking about that scheduling quirk, too, I had brought that up the other day with a lot of us here at the frat house. The Dallas Cowboys will play the Philadelphia Eagles on Thanksgiving Thursday. And then the Eagles will play immediately after them, will play Seattle at home at Lincoln Financial Field. And then immediately after that game, host Dallas again. So the Eagles will play Dallas separated by one game only, and that game just happens to be against the Super Bowl champion, defending champion, Seattle Seahawks. So
that should be a pretty good series of games right there.
Yeah, that's going to be that's certainly going to test your ability to win a division or be anything at all in the playoffs for sure. We've talked about the Eagles. Let's talk about them real quick here. Because this is a team, too, that Brandon, you and I had talked about last week. There's been a lot of edginess from Philadelphia fans, not quite sure. Going into this game, they were 4-1. A lot of people saying, well, wait a minute, let's back it up. It's a weak 4-1. They could just as easily be 1-4. Nick Foles didn't look all that hot. McCoy, what's going on with him? He was getting something ridiculous like 2.3 or 2.4 yards a carry. Throw it out the window. The Eagles on Sunday night blanked the Giants at Lincoln Financial Field 27-0 against a Giants team that a lot of people thought, well, hey, they had worked out all their offensive problems. They had worked out all this new offensive scheme stuff. Eli was really starting to look comfortable. He was getting back to Super Bowl form. And everything was good in the world with New York. But back up the bus. Boy, I don't know where this Philadelphia Eagle defense came from that just sacked. They sacked Eli six times. Ryan Nassib was finally put in the fourth quarter. They sacked him twice. So the Eagles defense had eight sacks total and just were everywhere all over this offense. For the Giants, this was a very, very good game for the Eagles from the standpoint it was, first of all, it was a 60-minute game, which is something that we have seen the Eagles make a mistake on so many times this season, where they let a team hang around, a la the Rams week before, or they get that high-power offense going in the first half, and all of a sudden it's starting to sputter in the second half. LeSean McCoy, 149 yards on the ground. Nick Foles, 245 yards in the air. Two touchdowns, two interceptions. This has got Eagles fans nervous. The interception thing right now, he's tied for first in the most interceptions in the entire league. But overall, a rather impressive performance by the Philadelphia Eagles. And again, that's one of the reasons that they're tied with the Dallas Cowboys in the NFC East at 5-1.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good game. There was never any question who was in control, who was going to win. The Giants, like you said, looked horrible. They received a really bad blow with Victor Cruz going down with a torn patella tendon. He's done for the year, maybe longer. You know, the Eagles, they didn't leave totally unscathed. They, you know, Darren Sproles got a little sprained MCL. Teams claiming, you know, 2-3 week injury. I think we've seen sprained MCLs, or at least 4 to 6. Maybe it'll be the shorter side. I don't know. They're going to have to address it. He is a big part of their offense. He's a nice little changeup for, you know, when they do give McCoy a break. As a matter of fact, I believe I heard somewhere, too, they only have, like, one other running back on their roster. And he wasn't even active against the Giants. So, like, they couldn't even spell McCoy after Sproles went down. They had no other backs. So, you know, they're going to have to, you know, get this other guy. I forget who he is. Do you know who the third running back is?
Yeah, I do. I'm trying to remember.
Well, he apparently was inactive. You know, they had the guy that they traded away to Buffalo, but, you know, they don't have him anymore. It's somebody else, but they may need to shore up that position in the, you know, the next week or so till they get, Sproles back.
The other big surprise I was just going to mention real quick for this Eagles team all season long, albeit they weren't necessarily highlighted in this game, but all season long have been that special teams. And I think that they did actually get their hand. I think there was actually a slightly blocked punt at one point. I don't think it was fully blocked, but there was a tip. So while that was not a, you know, while you can't say it was a positive, like, a game-turning or offensive-turning type situation for the special teams, this special teams for the Philadelphia Eagles has been like something we've never seen before.
Well, yeah, and Darren Sproles is probably a big part of that, at least on the return game and on special teams. So that's a big blow. Chris Polk's the third running back I was referring
to. Chris Polk, thank you very much.
They need to get him, you know, more involved. Clearly, he'll be active for the next couple games with Sproles out. So, you know, hopefully they don't suffer any injuries and or they maybe need to pick up another guy or maybe bring somebody up from the practice squad. But, you know, having only three running backs on your roster is a little odd, I would think, because I think most teams carry 4-5 running backs. I mean, even in, you know, Carolina, they're down to their fourth and fifth, but they at least have 5. So, you know, that's something the Eagles need to pay attention to just a little bit, I think. But other than that, right now they're clearly clicking on all 8 cylinders. Got McCoy running again like you had brought up. I think the Nick Foles interception thing's nothing to worry about right now. He's not costing them games. I mean,
yeah,
5-1.
I would agree.
You know, until it, you know, it's, you know, Brett Favre was, you know, a Hall of Fame quarterback who consistently led the league in interceptions. So sometimes I think interceptions can be a little overblown. But, you know, at the same token, clearly you don't want to make the mistakes. But it might be in his head because he only threw, what, 2 or 3 for the whole year last year. So maybe he's thinking about it too much. He needs to just go back to playing.
He only threw two last year. But, you know, speaking of interceptions real quick, I just want to throw this out there because I was looking up some numbers pre-show. And where are the numbers here? Yes, here they are. You know, Aaron Rodgers over the course of numerous seasons now, Aaron can throw his share of interceptions as well.
Oh, sure.
You know, we've seen it. We've seen it because, you know, we joke about it here at the Frat House how Green Bay historically, for some reason or another, they just can't seem to put a really good offensive line in front of this poor guy. And so therefore he has a tendency, you know, he can throw his share of interceptions. Right now, Aaron Rodgers has thrown 15 touchdowns and just one interception all season.
Wow. Wow, that's pretty impressive.
That really is.
That's good for the Green Bay Packers. I mean, you know, they've had some games where they've dominated some people, but they've played close a lot of games. They need to, you know, they need to make sure they keep things going. And I think a lot of the key to them, as you pointed out, their line is so bad. They need to call, you know, quick timing passes and quick ways for Aaron to get the ball out of his hands. And he's clearly been pointed out by numerous TV analysts have one of the quickest releases in the NFL. So they need to play to that strength and just, you know, not worry about the line. You know, don't even let him hold the ball long enough to even get a defender near him. So that's what they need to do. And they seem to do it at times, but he was getting beat around a little bit by the Dolphins this past week. So anyway.
Hard to believe here, Brandon, but believe it or not, we have just about 5 minutes remaining in this hour. There you go again. It just flies by too quickly. If there's anything on your mind out there, get in real with us real quick. 347-826-9964. Let's end it up, though, on this one for a moment, because you sat here, we all sat here on Sunday afternoon. We watched so many games, as we always do here at the Frat House. Unfortunately, a lot of the audience here on Sunday had to listen to me do a lot of pissing and moaning about penalties, particularly in the Denver Broncos game that I was trying to track. And the penalty situation was just absolutely infuriating. And if you don't think penalties are a problem this year, at least from the standpoint of the referees, think again, and I've got the evidence. Believe it or not, folks, there is actually a website that tracks all of the penalties thrown every single week on every single team on every single play. Here's the website. It's www.nflpenalties.com. Yes, truly, go check it out. It is really, really fascinating because it all breaks it down by numbers. And one of the things, Brandon, I sent you over the link for it tonight. One of the things that I was looking at, excuse me, was that already so far through 6 weeks of play, there have been a total of 1,259 penalties in the entire league. 1,259 of them. That is averaging out to about 14 penalties per game. All right? Now, that might not sound like much, but believe it or not, that is about 10% higher than it was last year. Last year, at the end of the season, referees threw, by the end of 2013, they had thrown 3,245 penalties. Right now, this year, referees are on track to throw 3,567 penalties. That is right on. That is a 10% increase in the number of penalties thrown. And I got to tell you something. It's becoming infuriating. And here's the problem with this. And I think one of the reasons that we, you know, look, it's football. It's everybody's favorite sport to watch. We have a tendency to tolerate more with football than we do with other sports. But there was a great write-up by Rocky Boyman, who is an 8-year NFL linebacker. He was an 8-year NFL linebacker. Played for the Titans, the Colts, the Chiefs, and the Steelers. Over at a website called footballbyfootball.com. Get over and check it out. footballbyfootball.com. And the headline of his article this week is NFL, National Flag League. It's the National Flag League. And he makes a comment in there right now. He said, look, bottom line is this. Viewers might be putting up with it now. But I'm going to tell you right now, if you continue to put them through this kind of nonsense the entire season, you're going to start to really cut in on the quality of the product being put out there on the field. And he thinks that the quality right now is suffering in the visual game. Real quick, Brandon, any thoughts? We got about a minute and a half.
Well, I would agree with you. I'll say this, 10%, it seems a lot worse than that.
It does.
I wouldn't have been shocked to hear 25% increase. They need to stop all this defensive, especially the illegal contact and defensive holding penalties. They're getting ridiculous. I mean, it's out of hand. I mean, I realize they always try to emphasize stuff every year. Give it a break. It wasn't that big of a problem to begin with. They always react, and they're reacting to the Seattle Seahawks secondary from last year. They clearly were the best. They clearly won the Super Bowl with a very physical secondary. So their reaction is to throw more penalties against that kind of a secondary.
Yep.
The NFL needs to just stop.
All right, there you go. There's our program for this evening. Brandon, thanks again for joining me here and for all of you out there that are listening. Thank you. I appreciate it. Do me a favor and please make sure that you're turning some of your friends on to us to be tuning in next week. You don't have to wait until next week, though, because you can catch us here live on Thursday night with our flagship program, the Frat House Sports Show. We'll be bringing you number 162, and that'll be coming to you right here at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Please be here with us for that one. All right, for all of us here at Frat House Sports, thanks very much for joining in. tuning in. And listen, can't wait until Thursday, another football season.